Rod Sullivan, let's begin with you, the attorney for 71-year-old Curtis Reeves, already saying at the first court appearance that his client, Mr. Reeves, felt he was threatened when Chad Olson, the man who died, threw a bag of popcorn at him. He's saying that his client felt he had the right to defend himself. The Pasco County PD say that's just bunk. What do you think? Is that a potentially credible defense in this?
Well, I mean, like everybody else, as an attorney, I know that you have to wait till all the facts come out. But let's talk about it, first of all, with the facts as they appear to be. There are 25 people in the movie theater. Nobody saw a weapon. Nobody saw Olson strike Reeves. And therefore, it doesn't appear like he's going to have the evidence to support that kind of defense. But let's just change the facts. Let's just assume that he did have a set of brass knuckles and that he had struck Mr. Reeves in the face, and that the Reeves then produced a gun and shot him. Would that have been the right, you know, the right course of action? And understand your ground. You know, you have the right to make a choice. You have the choice to either try to flee, which we call in law retreat, or you have the right to use deadly force in response to deadly force. And that's really the only difference with stand your ground. I think stand your ground is a little bit blown out of proportion as being an expansion or turning Florida into a free fire zone. I really think it's captured the public's imagination, but that's not really the facts.
Not really the facts. John Phillips, your thoughts. You're representing clients that where this statute figures in. How do you see this proceeding?
I'm 19 days away from, you know, a family having a trial over loud music that escalated like this. And I respectfully disagree with Professor Sullivan, because we are seeing this more and more. It's creating an entitlement within those that know the law, within those that carry guns regularly, whether, you know, Zimmerman's obviously different than Michael Dunn, who's differently from Reeves, and who's different from, you know, the hundreds of other shooters under these situations. But you're creating this, you know, you're just kind of changing America. It's a new normal with stand your ground and where people are going, such that, you know, now somebody's going to be disobeyed and go report, leave, you know, Marissa Alexander style, leave and come back. And then, you know, have a popcorn fight escalate into, well, I thought, you know, my life was in danger.
And if you're just joining the program, we want your calls right now at 549-2937 with your thoughts about the story making national headlines as a retired Tampa police officer is charged with second-degree murder after shooting another moviegoer in a theater outside Tampa. Lots of emails and tweets coming in. Here's one, Rod Sullivan, from on Twitter. We as Floridians need to have an honest discussion about how our state has turned into the Wild West and how we can change it. Whether or not that's the truth, it seems that that's now the perception.
That is the perception, but let's talk about the history of this. First of all, where does stand your ground come from? Stand your ground are words that were used by the United States Supreme Court when it addressed this issue of whether somebody has the duty to retreat when faced with force. And the Supreme Court has clearly said there is no duty to retreat. So that was the law in most of the nation and in the state of Florida until 1999. And then in 1999, the Florida Supreme Court said, no, we think you have a duty to retreat to the wall if you can. And therefore, they changed the law, the Florida Supreme Court did. 5 years later, the Florida legislature came back and said, no, we're going to overturn that decision, and we're going to go back to the law pre-existing 1999, which says you have the right to exercise force in response to the deadly force. And I think a couple other things that I think people need to understand. You can never use deadly force in defense of property. So just because somebody's stealing your car or your bicycle or breaking into your shed, you can't use deadly force. But you can use deadly force when somebody is threatening you or somebody else with deadly force or a forcible felony, kidnapping and things of that nature. And the other thing is that you always had the right to use deadly force in your own home. There was this castle doctrine.
The so-called castle doctrine,
right.
Yeah.
So people have to understand how very narrow this is. You're in a public place. You are faced with serious bodily injury or death to yourself or someone else. And then you have the right to decide whether you're going to meet that by fleeing, by running away, or by using deadly force.
There was a history, too, with this. John Phillips, this gentleman, Curtis Reeves, another moviegoer, has testified that some weeks before this incident, she was texting at the same movie theater, and this guy glared at her and followed her out to the women's bathroom, for whatever reason, this really sparked his anger.
You know, that's what we're seeing. And, you know, I'd go even before the Supreme Court weighed in on Stand Your Ground. And the first time it was uttered was by the a militiaman who said, "Stand your ground, men, you know, do not fire until fired upon." And then the troops came and they retreated. And, you know, we do have a history of retreating to value life. And in Texas, you can stand your ground does allow mortal defense of property. But, you know, we're for the purposes of this case and what we're here about today, you know, we do have the issue with Reeves. And Reeves was that stereotypical guy where, you know, he was a security person, you know, worked at Busch Gardens even late in his life.
And he apparently was involved with the Tampa PD SWAT team.
Absolutely. And, you know, son was an officer. In fact, almost had to arrest his dad, I think, if he had been there a little bit earlier. And, you know, you just see that entitlement and you know, whether the immunity hearing, you know, people think Stand Your Ground is the immunity hearing and that's it. No, Stand Your Ground comes in, you know, from the moment that person walks around with the gun, and it just creates this new normal of when you can kill. And it goes all the way to the end of the jury instruction where, you know, the jury was charged in Zimmerman with do you find that Zimmerman had a right? You have to find that Zimmerman had a right to stand his ground if, you know, he was in mortal fear of his life. And then the question is, you know, what is reasonable mortal fear of your life? If the aliens, let's just make a crazy hypothetical. If the aliens come down and we've been ingrained to fear aliens our entire lives and we all start shooting them, you know, that's apparently okay under Stand Your Ground. You know, we got the next Star Wars, you know, but, the problem is we're not talking about aliens. Oftentimes we're talking about white, black, white. And of course this was two Caucasians.
This was two white men. Rod Sullivan, the affidavit states that the defendant, that's Curtis Reeves, told police he removed his .380 auto handgun from his pants pocket, fired one round, striking the victim, and that he was in fear of being attacked. Will a jury buy that?
Well, the important thing, the interesting thing about Stand Your Ground is he's going to get a first shot before a judge. And so he's not going to have to wait to go to the jury to make this argument. Is the judge going to look at this and say, yes, I think you were in reasonable fear for your life because somebody stuck their hand in their pocket after throwing popcorn at you? I think that the odds of that ever succeeding are extremely small. So there's got to be some substantial fact that comes out that's not currently there. Now, if there was a knife, it's a different story. Set of brass knuckles, different story. Popcorn and a hand in a pocket, that's not going to do it.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, as we get you on the line right now at 549-2937 with your thoughts about the deadly movie theater shooting outside of Tampa. Let's go to David in Ponte Vedra this morning. Hi, David. How are you today?
Well, you know, let's have a little logic in this conversation, okay? Real quick. Tinseltown, I know, go there, and the do not use your devices come on after the previews. I think they should put this do not use your devices before the previews, because this happened during the previews. Now, let's have a little common sense again. If it happens to me and somebody's in front of me with their device, I'll politely tell them to turn it off. Or if they don't, then I'll go to the manager and have the manager come over and tell them to turn it off or kick them out. And these two people, and this guy using the device, he should have turned it off right away. He was talking to a babysitter, babysitting his 3-year-old little girl.
Well, you know,
right.
This
thanks,
did,
David. That's all true. Yep.
There was a lot of history, a lot more history here than simply pulling out a gun. In fact, Reeves did go out of the theater, went and talked to the management, came back angry. Olson said to him, did you report me to the management? He said, you're darn right, I did. Olson threw popcorn at him, and that's when it escalated into the gun being produced. But
well, and along with the no texting rule, this theater had a no gun rule. So
most, you know, theaters do.
There's a question of, you know, there's a question of whether that constitutes a trespass. I mean, there may be some legal scholar, probably a professor, that can you know, somebody smarter than me, that can get into, did he have a legal right to do what he did?
Well, sure, I can address that. First of all, because a private entity like a movie theater puts up a sign that says no firearms, doesn't mean that you're breaking a law by bringing a firearm into the premises. If they see it or if they suspect you have one, they can ask you to leave. And if you don't leave, then you've broken the law.
Right. All right. Let's go to Charlie at the Beaches. Hello, Charlie. Good morning.
Good
Great, go ahead.
You know, I think all of this overlooks a subject in general. If you reside in Manhattan and you apply for a carry permit for a gun, you're going to be told no. Only under very unusual circumstances are you going to get a carry permit in the city of New York, which I believe probably has a lower murder rate than Jacksonville, Florida, by the way. The problem here is any fool, as long as he doesn't have a felony conviction, can get a gun and carry it on his person. If that were not the case, none of this would have happened to begin with.
Well, I would disagree. This is a guy with 27 years on the Tampa police force. And
I don't care what he did.
He would get a concealed weapons permit under any set of standards you can apply.
But you could make the argument, Rod, once you're retired from the force, do you need a gun?
Well, I think anybody who's wanting to suggest we ought to have more severe restrictions on carry permits are arguing that, well, they should have more training. Well, who has more training than a police officer? This is a guy who carried a weapon for many years, and therefore I think that any state that has a concealed weapons permit is going to allow this particular individual to have a concealed weapon.
I'd ask the questions, what medications was he on? You know, what state of dementia could he possibly have been in? You know, facts change, and this man, you know, may not have, you know, concealed weapon permits last, like driver's license, they're 8 years. I have one in my pocket, and I don't carry, but it's my right to do so. But, you know, all I had to do to go do that is shoot one bullet one time and sit in a boring class. I didn't have to take a test. I didn't have to show a lifetime of proficiency. I didn't have to show my neighbors thought that I was stable.
Here's an email from a listener, Jim. There are over 1 million concealed carry permits in Florida. The rate of accidental shootings in Florida is double the national average. There's a direct correlation between the number of concealed carry permits and the number of accidental shootings in the state. Lots of emails and tweets. Meanwhile, let's get a few more on the air. Let's see here from Hank. Why is he charged with second-degree murder? The guy was texting during the movie, and the previews are the best part of some movies. All right, Hank. I don't know if we need to be joking about this. Thanks for the email, though. From Jeff, in many states, movie theaters are gun-free zones. Is this not the case in Florida? There are too many angry citizens carrying guns in this state. Supreme Court action is needed to address this problem. He doesn't think stand your ground is the problem. And let's go back to the phones. Will in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Will. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning. I had read an article by ABC News in Tampa that said that the victim had struck the shooter in the face with an unknown object after throwing the popcorn on him.
Well, the object was the popcorn.
No. The ABC News said it was an unknown object. I mean, he would know it was popcorn. So it was an unknown object after the popcorn. And if that's the case, doesn't that change a 70-year-old say, hey, I was in fear of my life. A 40-year-old struck me in the face with an object.
This 70-year-old was 6'2", too. You know, I mean, there's some facts. And in seeing the mugshot, there were no blemishes on his face. You know, now we're getting into that Zimmerman thing where you're looking to see. But it really, the problem with stand your ground is it's all subjective anyway. So if he said that I thought this, you know, that there was something else that coming from his pocket, that's all he needs to say to at least, you know, grasp on to stand your ground, whether a judge or a jury buys it, it's up to them.
Yeah, and Will out at the beaches, thanks for the call. Let's go to Susan on the south side. Hello, Susan. Go ahead. All right, Susan, give us a call back if you can. 549-2937 to join the show. Mike in downtown Jacksonville. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Great. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to turn my question to both of the attorneys back to the stand your ground law. Just from this, you know, I think this is pretty obvious that training and whatever goes into having a concealed weapons permit is no guarantee against, you know, a heated situation escalating. There has been some criticism about stand your ground in terms of that, that there's a feeling by a lot of people that stand your ground is being used to as kind of an escape valve or a get-out-of-jail-free card for people who don't use good judgment when these situations arise. You know, when you have a weapon in your hand, something capable of ending people's lives, it's kind of an easy go-to in the midst of a heated situation for people that maybe don't have a good control of their temper. But it also should require an elevated sense of responsibility and a lot of consideration of the consequences of your action. And I think a lot of people feel that stand your ground removes that responsibility from a lot of people. What do you guys think in terms of that? I can take my answer
off
the air.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Let me suggest something. Tampa Bay Tribune has created a database on stand your ground. And if you really want to see if it's had an effect at all in Florida, I think you need to look at those case by case and not just rely upon the summaries of it. Actually look at those cases and say to yourself, did this person act differently because of stand your ground than they would have if there had been a duty to retreat? And first of all, we're talking about in the state of Florida roughly 50 cases. I mean, there are roughly 200 cases where stand your ground has been asserted, but most of those are in the home or in a dwelling of some type. The actual on your street, in public, stand your ground cases, about 50. Look at those 50 cases and say, do I think this person would have shot because they didn't have a duty to retreat? And it's very difficult to find one where you can say, well, this person made a choice instead of retreating to shoot. And that's why I suggest that the effect of stand your ground has not been to create a free fire zone in Florida. That's more of a perception than a reality.
You don't see that.
And while I'm not going to concede that the number's 50, if let's just say it is 50. Well, that means there are 50 children like the Olsen's child. There are 50 fathers like Ron Davis. There are 50, you know, mothers. I could name 6 or 7 clients that I have, and every life is sacred. And what we've done is open up Pandora's box with, you know, the prescription medication problem we have in America and, you know, gun violence on movies. These guys were at a violent movie. And, you know, cartoons are more violent. I mean, Nickelodeon now gives awards to some filthy, filthy stuff. And, you know, we're getting into the point where we've opened up Pandora's box and you see a trend here. There's a common thread between Zimmerman, Dunn, and Reeves. And they all knew about guns. They all knew about, I suspect we'll find out with Reeves, they knew about gun laws. They had this entitlement they were carrying with them. And I, in my own experience at a concealed weapons permit class, stand your ground was taught. And, you know, the gray area of the law was sold in a book at the gun store where I received my permit. And that's scary.
Meanwhile, Doris tweets the show, the problem is that people that carry concealed weapons think everyone else is carrying one, too. We have so many calls on this topic.
12,000 a month are getting certified for concealed weapons permits.
Let's go to Vince on the south side. Thanks for holding, Vince. How are you today?
Thank you. Very, very good discussion today. I've been a concealed weapons instructor for 12 years, and I think the root of the issue is the training or lack of that's received. Most state statutes clearly lay out how someone is supposed to be trained, the responsibilities of instructors. And I've heard both your guests allude to the poor or just anemic training that people receive. And I think that is just a huge part of the problem. There are a lot of people walking around with licenses that actually shouldn't have them because they receive their training at a gun show or quickie training at some place. And it's just a mess. And I think until Florida has comprehensive, consistent training across the state, we're going to have these issues. And then one other point I'd like to make, and I'll take it off the air, Zimmerman wasn't standing your ground. It was self-defense, if I remember correctly. Thank you.
The jury was instructed that Zimmerman had the right to stand your ground, and they found self-defense. So, I mean, it is influenced. And you know, one more point about that is, Professor Sullivan, I'm taking up too much time. You go.
No. I mean, I think debate between you and I is good on this topic. The caller is correct. Stand your ground was not asserted as a defense in the Zimmerman case. He went to trial, and he was acquitted on self-defense grounds.
But one of the jurors appeared, I think it was on CNN, and said that because the jury instructions included the state's stand your ground statute, they felt that they had to acquit him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's true. And I guess the question is, when did he have the opportunity to retreat? You know, his testimony, I think, was that he was on the ground with Trayvon Martin on top of him, he doesn't really have the opportunity then to retreat. Did he have the obligation earlier to retreat?
And you mentioned the Tampa Tribune's database. John in St. Augustine emails the show. Does the number of those cases include situations where an officer investigated and found the stand your ground defense valid without any arrest or prosecution?
No, and that's one of the problems with the database is you're trying to say that stand your ground creates more crime, but you really can't compare it because you don't know what happened before 2005 when a police officer said, he was... he was using his firearm in self-defense, therefore I'm not going to make an arrest.
And one more point to the caller's point is Florida also has reciprocity with other states, one of which allows legally blind people to have concealed weapon permits. So, you know, we've got a national problem that we have to address and have a standard where, you know, some heightened degree of background check allows is required.
Let's take one more call. It's Sherry in Ponte Vedra this morning. Hello, Sherry. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I've never been a fan of this law. Guns just are, they concern me and they frighten me, but I realize living in Florida, they are a fact of life. But, you know, in these three high-profile cases where you have an unarmed person being murdered by the instigator, somebody who initiated the confrontation, you know, can't we at least add that kind of stipulation in where, you know, if you're the person, you're the aggressor, you begin this confrontation, you cause the escalation, and then you murder someone because, you know, you're afraid that the popcorn might have killed you or whatever. It just seems reasonable to change the way we look at this law and how it's implemented. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Sherry, thanks for your thoughts.
Well, I would say that it's already sort of in there. You mean the judge has to find that you were reasonable in your belief that there was death or serious bodily injury going to be committed against you or somebody else. So it seems to me like that reasonableness already factors into whether or not this is going to stand as a defense.
John Phillips.
Time will tell. You know, we've got to get through Michael Dunn's trial, and we've got to get through Reeves' situation. We don't even know all the facts there. I mean, certainly from the initial reports of Michael Dunn and Jordan Davis, things have evolved immensely over the past year, thankfully. You know, because what you see first is the criminal defense lawyer coming out and beating their chest and saying, stand your ground, stand your ground, stand your ground. And my client was all in the right, and the victim was all in the wrong. And, you know, that's the only side we have out there right now. And until they bury Mr. Olson, you know, we're not going to hear much from the victim. And that's the horrible thing. And it's what I see every day is the victimization of the victim. And it's tragic. And, you know, stand your ground. We need stand your ground to some extent in this state, but to the tragedy I see and the entitlement that it's being misused and misapplied, we've got to do something about it.
Well, we thank you both, as always, for providing your legal analysis on this program, especially on this short notice. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
We were joined by Rod Sullivan, attorney at Florida Coastal and professor at Florida Coastal School of Law, and Jacksonville attorney John Phillips.